Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we'll have updates on the war in the Middle East and the impacts being felt here in San Diego, where Jewish Americans and Palestinians are voicing concerns for friends and loved ones in both Israel and Gaza. Then from Public News Service, hear why Republicans' failure so far to elect a Speaker of the House has brought congressional action to a standstill, including a halt to any efforts to approve aid for Israel and Ukraine. La Mesa's City Council majority is moving forward on a proposal that could bring digital billboards to the city, but opponents voiced fears that these could distract drivers and cause accidents along a busy stretch of Interstate 8. So we pulled public records to find out just how dangerous that section of highway already is, and we'll be sharing those results on our show today. The City of El Cajon is hosting a forum on homelessness impacts for local businesses. And KNSJ, the radio station our show airs on, invites you to its Gala 10-Year Anniversary celebration, so stay tuned for those fun details. Our newsmaker interview today is with Angela DeJoseph, the founder of Women of Color Roar Media. She'll tell us about the Women of Color Roar breakfast coming up, as well as her organization's efforts to encourage women of color to run for public office, plus a new leadership academy that they've just launched. A TV and media studio at Granite Hills High School has been eliminated, leading a taxpayer watchdog to ask some tough questions of the district's Bond Oversight Committee. And finally, we'll be interviewing actor and musician Robert Neary, who is bringing his show, So Good, The Neil Diamond Experience, to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on October 21st. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. After the Hamas terror attacks in Israel, in which civilians, including children, were slaughtered by militants, Israel has retaliated with airstrikes in Gaza. Now all Gaza residents have been urged to leave as Israel plans a ground invasion unless all hostages taken are freed. But according to the United Nations, there is nowhere for Gaza residents to go, with borders sealed as power, water, and fuel are shut off, prompting fears of a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The crisis has also sparked fear in local residents here in San Diego for family and friends in both Israel and Palestine as the impacts of war in the Mideast hit home. This week, students at local universities staged rallies and protests for people in both Israel and Palestine. On Monday, hundreds marched in support of Israel at San Diego State University. Ori Lehrer is an ambassador for Hillel and president of Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity, which organized a pro-Israel march at San Diego State University, along with students supporting Israel. He told 10 News, "We have family and friends that have been kidnapped, and this is the worst thing they've seen in their whole lives." He says the situation is beyond a conflict of land, beyond Israel or Palestine. This is a matter of humanity and war crimes. Others at the pro-Israel rally voiced fears for friends and loved ones in Israel's military, as well as civilians in areas where missile strikes have occurred. 2 days later, Palestinian students held a vigil in support of Palestine at San Diego State University. One woman at the vigil, who asked to remain anonymous for fear of retaliation, said her family is trapped in Gaza, adding, "The whole country is getting demolished, and there's nothing they can do." Not all Palestinians support the violent action of Hamas against Jews, just as not all Israelis support the actions of Prime Minister Netanyahu targeting Gaza. The historical roots of the conflict currently date back for decades or beyond. Israel was established by the United Nations in 1946 as a safe haven for Jews after the Holocaust. Some Palestinians have sought a two-state solution to assure Palestinians a homeland, but Hamas, the internationally designated terror organization currently controlling Palestine, has a stated goal of eliminating the nation of Israel, making negotiations all but impossible. One woman at the San Diego State Palestinian vigil told 10 News, "Of course we're not for any lives lost, no matter what, Palestinian or Israeli." But some have taken more radical stances. Students for Justice Palestine posted a flyer on Instagram touting the SDSU vigil as an Honor Our Martyrs event, an apparent reference to the Hamas militants who died. At Cal State Long Beach, the La Fuerza Student Association promoted a Day of Resistance protest for Palestine, which featured a drawing of protesters with a paraglider overhead, the aircraft used by Hamas terrorists to launch their deadly invasion of Israel. The image drew condemnations on social media, where one user called the image sickening. The San Diego Jewish Federation announced that the attacks by Hamas on Israel included Shaar HaNegev, San Diego's sister city, and that there have been terrible consequences. They announced that the mayor of San Diego's sister city in Israel was killed in a gun battle with Hamas terrorists. The San Diego Jewish Federation has launched a fundraising drive to help families impacted in their sister city, which you can find at jewishsandiego.org. The group has also held a vigil to honor the slain mayor of Shaar HaNegev, whom the group praised as an extraordinary partner who died bravely, defending not just his family and his kibbutz, but also Israel and the Jewish people. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This country is counting on us to come back together. This House of Representatives needs a speaker, and we need to open up the House again. But clearly, not everybody is there.
Representative Steve Scalise has withdrawn from the race for Speaker of the House, but will remain majority leader. The Louisiana Republican struggled with little room for error. The GOP four-vote margin makes the position of every member crucial, even that of scandal-plagued New York Republican George Santos.
We're going to have to find someone else in leadership that comes forward that's going to be a compromise candidate. But as for me, it's never for Scalise.
Chair of House Foreign Affairs Michael McCaul warns fellow Republicans the politics and disorder around the speaker vacancy is a dangerous game that tells adversaries democracy doesn't work.
So I see a lot of threats out there, but one of the biggest threats I see is in that room, because we can't unify as a conference and put a speaker in the chair to govern.
McCaul is pushing an aid package for Israel, but says his hands are tied. Nothing can pass the House until a new speaker is chosen. Some lawmakers are now pushing for acting Speaker Patrick McHenry to keep the job temporarily, with another government shutdown fight probable next month. Some progressives are getting pushback over their responses to the Hamas attacks. Democratic Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush are calling for an end to all Israel aid. Democratic Maryland centrist Steny Hoyer says he doesn't agree, but also says people who call Tlaib a terrorist for displaying a Palestinian flag are wrong.
I disagree with some of her comments. She lamented the death on both sides, and I think she condemned. I don't have her statement right in front of me, but she condemned terrorist activity.
The White House says so far about 30 Americans have died in the war. Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez faces another serious criminal charge, an accusation he acted as an unregistered foreign agent for Egypt. Back in 2019, Menendez accused former President Donald Trump of being a foreign agent for Russia.
They deserve to know if Donald Trump is wittingly or unwittingly an agent for the Russian Federation.
In a Florida campaign speech, Trump expressed frustration with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Trump even praised the Iran-backed group Hezbollah, calling them very smart after they fired an anti-tank missile at the Israeli army. Former Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney responded on social media asking Republicans if they would actually nominate someone that dangerous for president. A new $6.4 billion bond issue in California will fund thousands of behavioral health treatment beds and tens of thousands of outpatient slots. Governor Gavin Newsom says it'll modernize their mental health and substance use treatment.
Society becomes how we behave. We have a responsibility to shift this paradigm.
Finally, the Social Security Administration says beneficiaries will get a 3.2% bump in their checks next year to help buying power keep up with inflation. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
On September 27th, the La Mesa City Council majority voted 4-1 to ask staff to prepare a request for proposals to erect electronic billboards along Interstate 8 and potentially other areas in the city, with only Councilman Jack Hsu voting against the proposal. Hsu and other opponents argued that these could distract drivers, especially near the interchange of Interstate 8 and State Route 125. So just how dangerous is that area already? We decided to find out. East County Magazine obtained public records from the California Highway Patrol. We asked for data on accidents along I-8 East and West throughout the city of La Mesa, from Lake Murray Boulevard on the west to Chase Avenue and El Cajon on the east, since one billboard site would be near the La Mesa-El Cajon boundary. We also asked for data on accidents on on-ramps and off-ramps connecting Interstate 8 and State Route 125. The data reveals that from January 1, 2018, to October 10, 2023, that's about 5.5 years, there were 1,805 accidents in those locations. Those crashes resulted in 20 fatalities and 673 injuries. The vast majority of those occurred on Interstate 8, and on I-8 West alone, where the billboards are planned to go, there were 1,000 crashes, resulting in 5 fatalities and 383 injuries. Don Wood, a vocal opponent of the proposed e-billboards, told us, "I'm not surprised by this data." And he added, "There are numerous lane changes in the vicinity merging in that section, so it's not surprising that we would have many accidents in that stretch. Adding flashing digital billboards showing thousands of different advertisements daily would only add to the confusion and distraction. This is San Diego," he concluded, "where we have a lot of drivers who are drunk, drugged, and distracted." The city had proposed the billboards as a means of generating income for the city. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The City of El Cajon is holding a forum for local business owners and managers on Tuesday, October 17th at 7:30 a.m. at the El Cajon Police Station, 100 Civic Center Way, El Cajon, California, 92020. The aim is to discuss the impact the unhoused population is having on local businesses. The forum is a collaborative effort between the City of El Cajon and the El Cajon Police Department. The meetings will be led by Police Chief Moten and City Manager Graham Mitchell. The plan is to discuss ways to support local business owners with laws and resources upon which they can rely for assistance. Some of these support services will include encampment enforcement, graffiti removal, and more. Business owners and managers are invited to participate in an open and active dialogue and are highly encouraged to ask questions, voice concerns, and share solutions. If you are interested in attending, you can register at the link provided at eastcountymagazine.org under the article El Cajon Hosts Forum for Businesses on Homeless Concerns. I'm Jonathan Getz on 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
You're invited. KNSJ 89.1 FM is celebrating 10 years of community-powered radio. Join us at our gala, Saturday, November 11th, at the UDW AFSME Hall, 4855 Seminole Drive in San Diego. Doors open at 5 p.m. for dinner and entertainment with Reg E. Gaines, Katie LaDubs, Young Lions, and Gilbert Castellanos. For tickets, go to knsj.org.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. And my very special guest today is Angela DeJoseph. She is the founder of Women Color Roar Media, a local nonprofit with a mission to support, nurture, and encourage Black women to run for public office and seek careers in public service. The organization sponsors an annual breakfast and most recently launched the Women of Color Roar Leadership Academy. Angela is a journalist who has written for many newspapers and magazines, including our own East County Magazine. She's been the editor of Essence Magazine in New York and served as vice president of the San Diego Black Journalists Association. She is also an Emmy-nominated filmmaker and a prize-winning PBS documentary producer who attended the USC School of Cinema. Currently, she hosts the Women of Color The Women of Color Roar radio show that airs right here on KNSJ. And she has served as communications staffer for Assemblymember Keela Weber, as well as co-president of the Black and African Women Rise Democratic Club, and a whole lot more. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And, when you've been blessed enough to have a long life, you have a long resume.
Well, good for you. So can you start by telling us what motivated you to establish Women of Color Roar Media?
It's interesting. I went to Washington, D.C., and this was for the Women's March. And I went to, the building where all of the Congress people are. And you can go from one office to the next in their building. They're actually like little bitty offices. And so you go one and it's kind of exciting because, you see their name on the door and you go, oh, my gosh, So but what I found was going in those offices was I did not see people that look like me. And I thought, well, wonder why is it these staffers are, they're young, pretty much young, but they are also white, they're Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And I did a little research and I found out that it's expensive to live in DC and oh. You can't really make it.
Some of the challenges, that women of color in particular face running for office. And I guess just the cost of living in D.C. is one of them. Huh?
And raising money. But I'm just saying to even get in this, as an intern to get started. And so what I felt was I wanted to create an opportunity for young women of color to meet the elected officials and be able to get internships by getting to know them and also putting people together and giving them the resources and the education they needed so they could find a job in public service. So that was really why I started it.
Yeah, very important reasons. Apart from just the idea of diversity being a good thing, with the overt racism that we're seeing now among some political leaders and also the attacks on women's rights, including reproductive freedoms, is it more important than ever to get women into politics and particularly women of color?
Oh, absolutely. I think what Justice Ginsburg said when they asked her, when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? And she said, when there are nine. Yes. So, it's not just that we're actually women make up the majority of the population and the minority in the representative world, but also you're missing a lot of points of view and focus because, a lot of women, you have mothers, you have women who are taking care of a family. And so when it comes to women of color, you have a lot of women who are the heads of the households, who make a lot of the decisions, but yet they're not in the place where the decisions are being made for them. So I think it's very important that we get not only diversity, but I think that we have more women. And also, I also have to say, I also think we need more young women because I recently, spoke to our congressperson, Sarah Jacobs, and yeah. She's the youngest member of the California delegation, and she's the only person to, go on the floor of the Congress and talk about her period and talk about period trackers.
How important.
And an invasion of that is of a woman's privacy, but also she's of reproductive age, and you have people who are way out of reproductive age who are passing these laws and making us the say-so about women and their bodies.
Well, absolutely. And we've certainly seen a lot of controversy over the age of legislators in general. I mean, there were issues with Dianne Feinstein's health toward the end and Mitch McConnell on the Republican side, and two presidential candidates that are both,
people never 80. Want to talk about it, but Bernie is 82.
He is, that's right.
I mean, he has a young following. But,
and he's great. I mean, President Biden.
As somebody who now is of the older generation, believe it or not, people call me ma'am. And I'm like, who are you talking to? But
I had someone call me.
I think there's something to be said about experience, institutional knowledge. And I do believe that having senior members there is important. But it's off balance.
I mean, train the next generation.
And I also think that I personally believe in term limits myself. I don't think that anybody should be on the Supreme Court for life. I really think that whoever thought of that idea, who gets a job for life? no matter what you do, you just get to stay there. That's I don't think that's reasonable.
No, I can definitely understand that point. So tell me what your organization is doing to help women of color overcome the obstacles and, you know, run for office and get into public service in other ways as well.
Well, I'm really excited. We've actually this February, we had our fifth Woman of Color War Breakfast, which was started, you know, by me as a way to celebrate the Black women elected officials in San Diego and to invite the young women who were in high school and college to come to the event at our, you know, as our guest. And it's grown into this thing that everybody is coming to. And, you know, this year we honored Karen Bass, the new mayor of Los Angeles.
Yes.
And she used to be my congressional rep. So Karen Bass was actually on the big screen via Zoom live. And yes, we had our, you know, our mayor, Todd Gloria, and then we had the speaker, Tony Atkins, there to kind of welcome her and greet her. Then the Secretary of State, Dr. Shirley Weber, was our keynote speaker. Malia Cohen, who had just been elected state controller, she flew down that morning. She said she got up at 4 o'clock to be at the breakfast. But all these young girls for the first time got to be in a room with two Black women, constitutional officers, the most powerful woman in the state, you know, Toni Atkins, and then the first Black woman mayor of Los Angeles there. And the whole room was just, you know, full of people, and it was so exciting because they got to see them, they got to meet them, they took selfies with them, and then they got a chance to understand that if you can see it, you can be it. And they could see, I can be that, I can be in the assembly, I can be Secretary of State. And so I'm very, very excited about that. But we wanted to give them more because the breakfast, you know, as you come to the breakfast, it's wonderful, then you go home. So we just, that's why I decided to do the Leadership Academy. Yeah.
We'll get to that in a moment, but I wanted to see if you could give me an example or two of a success story or two. Are there women that you have recruited who, you know, or trained or mentored who are now holding public office or running?
Well, you know, actually, what's wonderful is the very first year, Norma Chavez Peterson, who is the first Chicana to lead a ACLU agency here in San Diego, and she offered to mentor. And so she was going to take a few girls, and maybe 11 of them all said they wanted, and she took all of them.
Wow.
They got to come down to her office, shadow her, spend time with her. The same thing with Sarah Jacobs' office. They have internships. The first place they reach out is to us. And the same thing with jobs. And so we're able to get that information out to young women in our community so they have an opportunity to apply. But, you know, but we also want to make sure that they have the preparation so they know what's expected. So what we do is we have elected officials come and one year we had a panel and asked them about running for office. And they all talked about the best way to do it and how to get there. And Dr. Weber said something, of course, that was great. She says, not everybody should run for office. And so, and that's the truth. It's like some people really need to work behind the scenes. And I'm one of those people that I enjoy being in the position in media where I can exemplify what they're saying and also get information out to the public.
Yeah, they need people that are strong writers, strong communicators, have all those other skills. The constituent casework people are so important also, the speech writers. So you're right. I mean, I've worked in.
When I was working for Dr. Akhil Weber, I got to write speeches and talking points. And as you know, the press releases and all that. And it was and be on the front row of her, you know, creating breakthrough legislation, which was a fantastic opportunity to really learn how the system really works.
Yeah, I cut my time in the legislature, my very first day on the job, this is 30, 40 years ago, but working for Assemblyman Elihu Harris. And he said, well, I'm taking my staff out to lunch. It's my secretary's birthday. Would you stay and write a speech? I got a major bill coming up this afternoon. And I said, well, sure. What is it? It's the bill to make Martin Luther King's birthday a state holiday before it was a federal holiday. So I was really honored that he trusted me to do this as the only non-African-American person in the office. But we really saw, you know, I mean, unfortunately, there was the Ku Klux Klan out protesting on the Capitol lawn against that bill. There was a bomb threat that came in while I was sitting there writing the speech. And so I guess, you know, I really resolved to do an excellent job on it, and the bill passed, but it certainly turned up the need for the kind of thing that you're doing and why we need, you know, more women and more Black women in positions of power, because we certainly don't want some of the people we heard arguing on the other side of that bill,
even the people that can stand between you and an opportunity. And so, and that's where, you know, you have a lot, you know, now there's a lot of, you know, DEI committees and everything, but the reality is that, you know, it takes really a mindset shift for people to understand that, you know, it's not only, you know, giving an opportunity, but you also have to understand the circumstances that everyone did not grow up in the same type of household. Everyone did not have the same, you know, luxuries that you had. And so you need to look at other things that makes the person well-rounded in terms of hiring, not only look at the fact that, oh, are they just like me? Oh, I'm going to hire this person who's just like me. So you end up really as classism, and you end up with one class of people really always being in the elected office. You notice how many of them are multimillionaires.
A whole bunch of them. Yeah, exactly. They're kind of out of touch with the average person, is certainly with people who've grown up in poverty, or maybe who were immigrants or refugees and came here from another country, you know, a different culture. So,
my family came from Trinidad.
That's right. Yeah.
So I totally understand about being an immigrant, and also someone who has to be between two cultures.
Yes.
So you're raised one way, but you also come to America and you want to blend in, and you want to fit in with especially when you're young, you know. And so it can be very difficult and hurtful to young people if you have an accent or different customs. So I think all of this gets back to bringing people together. And one of the things about Women of Color Roar that has been a true success in San Diego is that we have managed to bring all races, genders together for that event. It's in Black History Month. It's always the first Saturday. It's going to be February 3rd, 2024. But we have people of all ages, all races come together to celebrate Black women. And when I started it, people said, well, we've never done anything like that before. We don't know. And I'm like, you'll be okay. It's going to be okay.
Oh,
and now they love it. They come every single year. Yeah. They appreciate being able to have African culture. We wear our African garb, and we just celebrate who we are.
And you honor women leaders in the community as well. And you also sponsor high school and college age young women, these future leaders, to attend as special guests. And you've had some really powerhouse speakers. Now, this year's event is going to be Saturday, February 3rd. I believe it's at the Jacobs Center. And can you give us a little preview of, you know,
we always honor, you know, one woman as, you know, and that's the main awardee. And I haven't really told people, but I'll breaking news here. But the person that we're honoring this year is Barbara Lee.
Oh,
and Barbara,
candidate.
And it's not about really all the things that's going on right now in the Senate race, but it's really about her body of work. And I had an opportunity to meet her. I went to I was the guest of Sarah Jacobs at the State of the Union. Yes, I got to hang out at the State of the Union, but I got a chance to meet Barbara Lee there and talk to her. And she's an amazing woman with quite a story. And so those are the kind of women's, you know, the thing is with San Diego, it's like, you know, we run out of Black women here because, you know, we have Dr. Weber, we have Monica Montgomery Stepp, we had Genevieve Jones, right? But, you know, so that's why we've also reached out to other cities, and we honored Maxine Waters, and, you know, so we've gotten Los Angeles. Now we're going to go up to Northern California.
I remember Maxine way back when I was working at the legislature. That was what, 1979 or 80. She was a powerhouse then, and still is.
She definitely is. And then we always, and now, you know, because we do film it. When we were online one year during the pandemic, and we had women from all over the country that were in elected office. They sent us videos of who was their shero. And it's an amazing to see all of them talking about their sheroes. And so you know, being able to have women from other cities that are leaders also participate. We did Lauren Underwood, who's in I believe in Ohio. She's one of the youngest members of Congress, also certainly the youngest Black member of Congress, and she's a power, another powerhouse.
So and, the tickets for the I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so I'm just saying, so, you know, the event we're going to have, you know, we'll have one person, a California person, somebody from the Congress, and then we'll also have our, you know, local heroes too.
Fantastic. Now the tickets go on sale. The event isn't until February, but the tickets go on sale November 1st, I understand. How can people get them?
They can go to our website, which is womenofcolorroar.com. Mm-hmm. And we have we'll have a link on there where you can go right in, you can and buy tickets. And we, you know, for years we always had like an early bird special, and we never changed our ticket price in 6 years. And everybody else's ticket prices have gone up, and ours stayed the same. And then it was like, okay, you know, we're actually going to be in the hole, but we had sponsors that stepped in, because normally we expect about 100 young women that are nominated by their schools every year. And so we budget to pay for their breakfast.
Yeah.
This past year, the schools nominated 194. Wow. Girls. So usually, you know, we have 100 and then the rest go on a waiting list. And then we had sponsors that came in and they said, you know what? Let them all come. We'll pick up the cost.
Wow.
And so that was wonderful. So wonderful, because that meant we didn't have to, you know, cut anybody off who really wanted to come.
That is so important. Just congratulations on that.
And the thing is with, you know, we're a 501c3, we're a nonprofit.
Yeah.
You know, we're all volunteers, and we, you know, people donate, and it goes towards the cause, and it goes towards the work that we do.
Excellent. Now, you were starting to tell us before about your Women of Color Roar Leadership Academy that you just launched in September. Can you tell us about that? What kind of classes?
That is so exciting. As I said, at the breakfast every year, we have these young women, and it's just so great to have them there, and they get to meet their elected officials and get opportunities. But you know, I see them surrounding some of the women and asking, like, you know, where should I go to college or what should I do? And so we wanted to give them more. And so the Women of Color Roar Leadership Academy is a life skills workshop. Basically, it's everything I wish I had learned in high school. So the curriculum is everything I wish I had known. So we tackle, you know, how to write a resume, how to interview for a job. And then we U.S. Bank came in and they did a workshop on financial literacy and how to budget.
Yeah.
And we had women who have young women with successful jobs already come, and we had a panel, we call them the power panel. And they came and they talked, you know, Chida Warren Darby works for Mayor Gloria. Chevelle Newell Tate, you know, works for Dr. Akilah Weber. We had all these women there who could shed light on their career journey. If they started as an intern, what school did they go to? Did they go to an HBCU? Did they feel that was a hindrance? And it was so interesting. One of the students asked that question, and they all said, no, that is absolutely not true. And actually, that we have some of the, I mean, the Vice President of the United States.
Yeah, Kamala Harris went to power.
But more black doctors come out of HBCUs and Black professionals.
Yeah,
and it's a place where you can be nurtured and be yourself. And it's a very good environment for learning. So we didn't want, so it was so good that they could feel free to ask those type of questions. And then Vivi Moreno was there, and she talked about, you know, being a woman of color and what she goes through, because she has to take some very different points of view than some of the others on the council, and even different from the mayor, and stand her ground. And I thought it was really powerful that they got to see that, hear from her. And one girl asked her, you know, about how could they get into, you know, public service? And she says, well, you can start, you can have an internship in my office. And she walked over and gave her card right there on the spot.
So, wow, that is so exciting.
So that's what, it, you know, those are the things that we do, the Leadership Academy. And then we had a career fair And we had a little passport, and they had to go to each table and learn about the different careers, opportunities at companies. And we also, the Secretary of State also had the Registrar of Voters come and have a table, because at 16, you can pre-register to vote. So they could right there on the spot, go right over, register to vote. We don't tell anybody who to vote for, but we say, vote, participate.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important for everyone to do that. You also have the radio show. Can you tell us a little bit about your show and when and where people can hear it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I actually started working in television, you know, many years ago, and I worked on Live with Regis and Kathy Lee, and I was living in Chicago at the time, and I would fly to New York and I would do their show. And then when I moved back to Los Angeles, I started doing AM Los Angeles on Channel 7. And so, but I've always really wanted to have a talk show, talk about issues. And so when the opportunity at KNSJ came up, it was so great. And what I do is I try to use it as a tool to educate people, because I run into people all the time. They don't know who their assembly person is. They don't know the difference between the city council and the assembly. They don't know, you know, they don't know the voice that they have, that they can call up and they can let, you know, their positions be known on issues. So that's what the show is about. It's people, politics, and policy. Yeah. And so it's Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. on KNSJ 89.1. And then it reruns again during the week. I think it's at 5 o'clock on Wednesdays it reruns. But the idea is to have a show that's really community-based, where I talk to, you know, I talk to leadership people. I also talk to elected officials. This week we had chair of the Board of Supervisors, Tara Lawson-Reamer, on Excellent. The show and talk to her. And it's a good opportunity. And then I run into people who have been on the show, and they go, and they still remember that I interviewed them. I know with Raul Campillo, who's now on the city council, and Nora Vargas, who's now the head of the Board of Supervisors, have all been on the show. Okay. And they know that it's important. It's important. You know, you can do sound bites on, you know, on the big networks, but really having a conversation with a person in the community is totally different.
Agree. I mean, we've done a lot of candidate forums. We've hosted right here on East County Magazine, and I've interviewed a lot of candidates as well as elected officials through the years. And you're right. I mean, you can ask questions that nobody else has asked them before sometimes, and make them think, you know, not just the talking point. So it's really important once in a while, just asking the right question. You may find out they've gone and done something. Or
and having the opportunity, as you know, to actually ask follow-up questions, because that's where you get the real answer.
Yes.
So you might get the first answer, might be the talking point, but then you go a little deeper. But what I found is that there's more information, and they're willing to share it about what they're doing in office, how it's done, and how we can be a part of it. And that's where I want to see more empowerment of the community members.
Absolutely. And more women in media, and more women of color in media too, as well as holding public office and working for those public officials. Angela, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. What else are you aspiring to do next? Is there anything else on your wish list?
My wish list is really, I want to continue with the Leadership Academy and you know, be able to do maybe two a year. And would like to really, I guess, year round, have Women of Color Roar available as a resource, so that we can, you know, especially when it comes to college applications, to be helping people, these young women. And the other thing is scholarships. There's so many scholarships that we find out about, and it's like, it's due next week. So I really want us to be a portal that has a calendar of all these different scholarships available, and have advisors. We have some people who've offered to be advisors, so the girls could get somebody to help them with their applications to college, and also just steer them, like, what should I major in? Or, you know, should I leave town, or should I stay here? Should I go to community college? So the idea is really, I believe, to, at this point, build Women of Color Roar into a full-time organization that you can call anytime and get help.
Yes. Well, listeners, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking with Angela DeJoseph. She is the visionary and the founder and the mover and shaker behind Women of Color Roar Media. And you can learn more about her, as well as get tickets for their upcoming Women of Color Roar breakfast at womenofcolorroar.com. www.eastcountymagazinelive.com. Angela, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The TV film studio at Granite Hills High School in El Cajon has been decommissioned, raising concerns from a taxpayer watchdog. The Career Technical Studio was built and supplied with state-of-the-art equipment using bond money provided by the taxpayers of East County, as well as grant money. The TV film class was designed to allow students to gain hands-on experience in filming, editing, and broadcasting. In a letter to the District Citizens Bond Oversight Committee from Harper Levington with the East County Taxpayers Association stated, "As taxpayers, we entrusted our hard-earned money to the school district with the expectation that it would be utilized to enhance our students' educational experience and opportunities. However, it is disheartening to learn that the TV studio, which represented a significant investment, has been demolished." In a letter sent to ECM, Levington stated, "The Career Technical Education Studio, built with Proposition U bond money and supported by CTE grant money, was designed to be a multi-purpose space that could be used for learning about media, filming the Daily News Network, editing, and broadcasting. It had state-of-the-art cameras, Mac computers for editing, isolation booths, mics, custom cabinets, and an editing bay. Over the years, the network has been used for many events, from school-produced news segments and talk shows to student films and documentaries. It is a truly versatile space that countless students have enjoyed." Levington's letter asked if there was any misuse of bond money, what the decision-making process was to eliminate the studio, and what happened to furnishings and equipment. ECM forwarded Levington's letter to the district and received a response from Colin McLashen, Executive Director of Communications for the district. According to McLashen, a series of events led to the removal of the class, beginning with the teacher of the class resigning in August of last year. When deciding how to proceed with the class, several factors were taken into account, such as enrollment numbers, lack of qualified teachers for the position, and labor reports of declining career opportunities in the television and film industry. Funding was ultimately reallocated to more in-demand classes such as digital arts, culinary, and sports medicine. With the removal of the class arose concerns that the bond money was no longer being used for what the purpose for which it was allocated. The Grossmont Union High School District, GUHSD, said in response, "It is not uncommon or unreasonable for schools to make programmatic changes in order to best align their finite resources. It is not a violation of the bond language or any other law for a school to consider an alternative use for a facility." The now empty classroom was offered to the digital arts teacher, but the instructor declined. The teacher did not want to move rooms, since the school year had already started and the space was not large enough to accommodate her large class size. The space was also offered to the sports medicine teacher, who also declined due to lack of space for equipment, McLashen stated in his email. The high-tech equipment in the TV film class that was purchased using the Career Technical Education, CTE, grant money remained within the CTE program. The computers were given to the digital arts class since their computers were older, and any other equipment was given to the TV film teachers in the district. Equipment that was deemed unusable was either recycled as e-waste or sent to auction. Any furniture or fixtures remaining were repurposed to other programs on the Granite Hills campus. While the TV film class has been eliminated at Granite Hills, the GUHSD still has 44 career technical education pathways across 12 in-demand industry sectors. They also say that they are a pioneer in opening access for students to state-of-the-art resources and CTE opportunities. Last year, Granite Hills applied for and received a California Partnership Academy, or CPA, grant, one of only 12 CPA grants offered by the state,
to build a new biotechnology pathway and open opportunities for students in a sector that grew faster in California than the national average in 2022 and added 23,196 jobs to the California economy in 2021. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, my very special guest is Robert Neary, a star of Broadway, TV, and movies. He's also a talented musician and the star of So Good, The Neil Diamond Experience, a live show coming to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on Saturday, October 21st. His uncanny tribute performance will include 22 of Neil Diamond's greatest hits, such as Cherry Cherry, Sweet Caroline, Solitary Man, and others, backed by the Mystic Band. And he's also going to be telling some stories, I understand, behind some of those classic songs. He grew up on Long Island, listening to and mimicking his two favorite artists, Elvis Presley and Neil Diamond. His acting career started with a guest star role on the TV series Fame. Later, he co-starred in the movie Teen Wolf 2 and played Officer Frank Marino, for those of you who are soap opera fans, on General Hospital. He moved to Nashville and recorded two solo contemporary gospel projects before moving to L.A., where he went on to guest star in over 50 TV shows, such as Criminal Minds, Grey's Anatomy, FBI's Most Wanted, and many more. He also played the lead role of Sonny in the Broadway hit A Bronx Tale, the musical. The real Neil Diamond has retired from performing recently, but it's long been a passion of Robert's to someday put together a tribute show to Neil Diamond, which you can see on October 21st at the Magnolia. So, Robert, welcome. It is a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, as a kid growing up in New York, what first attracted you to Neil Diamond's music? What makes it so special?
I like I had said, you know, I used to listen to Elvis Presley, and I was attracted to Elvis Presley, of course, because of the movies back then in the '60s, and then I would listen to it. And then one day I remember my older brother had a really big record collection, and he was playing a Neil Diamond album. And I said, wow, this guy's got like a baritone voice, you know, that really rich baritone voice like Elvis Presley. So I just started listening to him. And, you know, and I just really, really took into, you know, to liking his music so much and his voice. Yeah.
You picked two of my favorites growing up, too. I got to see Elvis Presley in person, never got to see Neil Diamond, was planning to. And then he announced his retirement.
Yeah.
So what musical training did you receive, Robert, and how did your career in acting prepare you for becoming a musical performer?
I actually had no musical training. I taught myself how to play guitar. I taught myself how to play piano. Never took any voice lessons. I just started singing when I was like 5-6 years old.
Amazing.
When company would come over, aunts and uncles and everybody, I would just, you know, do my little shows in the living room. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be ever since I was a little kid. So I went through high school just, you know, knowing that when I got the chance, I'd move to California and become an actor. And the singing was always there. I did high school musicals and I did, you know, some musicals outside of high school. But once I got into acting, once I got to LA, the acting was forefront.
Yeah. You know, so you've got a lot of natural talent.
Yes.
What is, I know it's hard to choose, but do you have a favorite Neil Diamond song? And can you maybe share one of your favorite Neil Diamond stories that people might hear at the Magnolia?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I Am I Said is one of my favorites. Holly Holy and I Am I Said and Shiloh are my three favorites. Yeah. I Am I Said mostly because it's a very personal song. And I actually talk about how it became his most personal song and how he wrote it. And I don't want to divulge any secret right now, but it's
under the show, folks.
Yeah, it's a fantastic song. It took him 4 months to write it. He was going through a very, very dark time in his life. And that's all I'm going to say. And just once I always loved that song, but once I found out that story and I incorporated it into my show, I really feel for it because he moved from New York to California and, you know, had a big change of life, much like I did when I was younger. And and a lot of people, as far as a story about Neil Diamond, a lot of people ask me, if I've ever met him. I've ever met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I jokingly say, but it's true. I say, well, I parked his car in Nashville in 1995.
That was on my list. I was going to ask what he was like, if you've ever heard from him since you started this tribute.
Well, that's, the truth is I was recording a couple of gospel albums of my own in Nashville. And I had worked at a valet restaurant, in a very popular restaurant in Nashville. And it was late at night, and the car pulled up, and I opened up the passenger side, and he stepped out, and he was with his manager, and I said, "Oh my God, you're Neil Diamond." And I shook his hand, and we chatted, and then he was in there. They were in there for quite a while, so I told everybody else they can leave, and it was just me at the end, and I gave him the keys, and we were able to chat, you know, and just talk. And I think I have his autograph. But back then, of course, there were no phones with cameras, which would have been great. But that's the only time I did get to meet him. However, I was in touch with his wife, Katie, via a third person, a mutual friend, mm-hmm. when I put this show together. I wanted to make sure I was doing everything legitimate. I wasn't stepping on any copyrights or anything.
Yeah, I wonder, what did he think about that?
Mm-hmm. She gave me great, she gave me great response. His wife, Katie, gave great response through my friend and said they love the tribute shows, and she wishes us the best, and she gave me advice and everything. And I hope really someday that he does get to come and see this. If not this time around LA, maybe next time.
That would be awesome. A couple more quick questions. Let's talk about your acting for a second. You've had starring roles on Broadway, on TV, in movies, as well as a musician. I wonder if you have a couple of memorable moments from that illustrious career that you could share.
Oh gosh, there's so many. My favorite, the first time this happened as an actor, as a matter of fact, auditioning and getting roles and auditioning and not getting roles. And then a lot of times going in for certain television shows, especially through the 2000s. I kept going in for Criminal Minds. And one day I was driving in the car, my agent calls, and she told me about this role on Criminal Minds. And I said, well, what time is when's the audition? Can you email me the audition material? And she says, no, they're going to hire you. They know you very well. They're just going to, it's straight to offer. And it turned into two episodes. It was supposed to be, they told me it's supposed to be about six or seven episodes, but it turned into two episodes. I was Giuseppe Montolo. I was a major unsub in season 11.
So you get to work with all the big stars. And
they were great. So that, that being able to just, as an actor, just say, hey, no, it went straight to offer. And most recently, that just happened last year as well. I'm so popular now with my show and touring with the Neil Diamond Show. I told my managers, my acting agents, I'm getting away from this because the business has shifted and I don't do a lot of auditions. So I'm not auditioning anymore. And if anybody wants, they know where I am. And she called me one day and she said, hey, the Blacklist wants you. And I said, I'm not auditioning. And she said, no, they're offering you the lead role. They want you to come in.
Every actor's dream, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm at a good place where I can at least say that,
Very cool. I want to ask you, what advice you might give to up and coming performers, all those young kids like you that are out there listening to this maybe and, wanting to make it someday. What advice would you offer to them?
I say this because my son, actually, I'm taking them to a college meeting today. I'd say to my son and my daughter, you've got something. You can never say I can't. You can never say I can't. You've got to just keep going. You've just got to keep going. What will happen is if you don't have it, it will be shown. You'll get people who you get close to and say, maybe something else, like people who want to be a singer, and they just can't sing. A talented singer or musician that can be brought out. You can take training and that can all be brought out if it's not God given. And you'll know once you know that it's there and everybody agrees with you, you just can't say no. You can't say I can't do it. I can't do it. You just have to keep going. And if you have the tenacity and the support of family and friends and loved ones, then you can do it. And again, the only downside is if you don't have it, but you think you have it, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, you know. So,
yeah, I want to play just a little snippet so people can kind of hear what you sound like here.
Oh, if you got something, sure.
There you go, folks. If you didn't know better, you'd think you were listening to Neil Diamond himself. We are just about out of time. Yeah. Is there anything else that, Robert, that you would like our listeners and viewers, I should say, because we're also going to run the video of the interview on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So we've got double coverage. What else would you like folks to know?
You know, this is down in San Diego, right? Around down there. I was in the lead in the Moonlight Amphitheater, Catch Me If You Can, some 9 years ago.
Oh, good for you.
I played Frank Abagnale Sr. In the Moonlight Catch Me If You Can. So a lot of people might know me already from down there.
There you go.
And this is a tremendous show. It's a tremendous show. And I hope a lot of people...
Yeah, I've watched the highlights. It looks fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
So, listeners, for those of you who've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Robert Neary, who will be performing live in the tribute concert So Good, The Neil Diamond Experience, coming up at the Magnolia Theater in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, October 21st. You can get tickets at magnoliasandiego.com, and you can view highlights, hear a little of the music, and learn more at So Good, The Neil Diamond Experience.com. Robert, thanks so much once again for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
You're invited. KNSJ 89.1 FM is celebrating 10 years of community-powered radio. Join us at our gala, Saturday, November 11th, at the UDW AFSME Hall, 4855 Seminole Drive in San Diego. Doors open at 5 p.m. for dinner and entertainment with Reg E. Gaines, Katie LaDubs, Young Lions, and Gilbert Castellanos. For tickets, go to knsj.org.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.